Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's Eddie Trunk. Welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com, Apple Podcasts, and of course, now totally free on Spotify. Hope you are having a great week. Thank you for joining me for another interview-packed episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I hope you enjoyed last week with Neil Sean. Just a quick note, because I got an email or a text actually from Neil about last week's podcast that I just want to clear up for people. Neil wasn't aware of it, but I wanted to let you, the listeners, know. I think you probably have this figured out by now. But each and every week, I tell you the interviews you hear, almost every week, every single one of them, come from my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation and is heard live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Sirius XM channel 106. And there's a replay every night, 10 to midnight Eastern Time. And you can always listen on the app as well if you're a Sirius XM subscriber. So the interviews on this podcast are for people who don't have Sirius or XM and don't listen to that show, or if they want to hear them again, or for people outside of the U.S. or Canada that can't get Sirius XM. But as I always tell you, for the cost of a couple Starbucks, you could be hearing my show and a ton of other content every day, and you're only getting a little tiny taste here on the podcast. But the important thing I want to tell you about that I had to clarify last week with Neil and others, just so you're aware, is because these interviews originate on radio, there are things that sometimes we need to edit around and cut out a little bit. The biggest one being music. Because as I'm sure most of you guys know, you cannot play songs on a podcast unless you have clearance and approval from the publisher, the songwriter, and the artist. Podcasts are a different beast than some other things, and you have to make sure. You know, that's why you don't hear music and songs played generally in podcasts, because they could come after you for the publishing. So that being said, last week during the Neil Sean interview, you heard us talk about this version of Ain't Talking About Love that Neil did and setting it up, because that interview originally aired on my radio show where I could play the song. On the podcast, you can't play the song, so it had to be cut out. So just here, you're aware of how it works, which is another reason why if you're in the US or Canada and you don't have Sirius XM, you should come on board, because you'll get the songs as well. Here on this show, we can't. Neil thought something happened with the song, and I guess heard on the podcast that it was cut out, and I'd explain to him, no, you can't play music on podcasts. That's the case with anything. So from time to time, when you hear me in the course of an interview, if you only listen to the podcast, setting up a song or talking about something we're about to play, the reason it does not air here is because we can't air it on a podcast. Just so you're aware of all of how that all works. Anyway, with that being said, let me remind you that we thank Goodies, our sponsor, Goodies Powder, great products. Their new product is called Goodies Hangover. Halloween weekend coming up this weekend. Maybe some people tipping a few back. You might get a hangover. If you do, you want to have some goodies hangover on hand. Powerful, powerful pain reliever with an added boosting ingredient. You get fast pain relief and a boost of alertness to help battle the groggy, tired feeling that comes with a dreaded hangover. Hangover relief at the speed of powder. Goodies Hangover is available at Walmart, Dollar General, Amazon, and other fine retailers. Learn more at goodiespowder.com. EddieTrunk.com is my website, at EddieTrunk on Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook. And I am on Cameo. If you'd like to order a personalized video as a gift for someone, just find me on Cameo. Just search my name and you will see all the details there. Two guests for you on this week's podcast. Coming up first, Steve Stevens, fantastic guitarist, best known for his work with Billy Idol. Also has a band with Geezer Butler currently called Deadland Ritual. Talk a little bit about all that. Also keep in mind, this interview was done a few weeks back, so we talk about some streaming stuff that Steve was doing at the time, which has now passed. So keep that in mind with the interviews as well. Keep the context in mind. Keep in mind some of the things these guys are promoting may have happened already, if it's about a live show or a stream or something like that. But still, enough good stuff in the Steve Stevens conversation. I wanted to bring it to you, and we'll do that first. And then we'll follow up with a conversation with guitarist and vocalist Orianthi. She, of course, played with Alice Cooper, played with Michael Jackson. We talk about all that with her. She, for a long time, was romantically linked and making music with Richie Sambora. We talk about that a little bit. And she has a brand new solo album out, which we talk about as well. We'll do that one for you second. Double dip with two guitarists, Steve Stevens first, Orianthi second, on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. So with that, we'll come back and we'll start with Steve, and that's coming up next.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who? Let me start this thing off.
Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get into it, folks, on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Orianthi in a little bit, but we start with Steve Stevens. Steve was talking about a rock and roll fantasy camp masterclass in this interview, which has since passed. And we get into a lot of other cool stuff, too. Stuff with Vince Neil. Stuff about Deadland Ritual, stuff about Billy Idol. Enjoy Steve Stevens. Steve, how are you, man?
Good, man. How are you, Eddie? Family all good and everything?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. You know, I've been lucky. I've been able to work, you know, being here in New Jersey. I've got a home studio, and I always did my show from home, so not a lot changed for me as when the pandemic hit. But right. I know for a lot of people that wasn't the case. You're in L.A., I assume.
Yeah, yeah. You know, same with me. I mean, it's, you know, I've got a home studio and, you know, life other than, you know, restaurants and concerts, obviously, but life is pretty much the same for me. I'm, you know, in working and recording.
You know, all the musicians I've talked to during this crazy time, Steve, have all told me the same thing, that they are writing or recording or making music virtually or what have you. I think it's going to result in a slew of albums when things get back to normal. But I also think a lot of people are just realizing, you know what, we might as well just put this stuff out, because even people that were holding records are starting to actually just put them out because they're already making another record, it seems like. What's the workload been yeah, for you? Yeah. What have you been working on in your studio? Are you writing stuff for yourself or for Billy Idol, or what have you been working on?
Well, you know, our original plan, we finished, we do our residency in Vegas, and we finished that in March, and our plan was to go in and record some new music. So we were literally like the last act in Vegas when COVID hit. We stopped doing meet and greets, and so we came back. We self-quarantined, and our plan was to go in with Butch Walker. And he's a kind of one-man army, you know, with his studio. So he also quarantined. So the three of us got together, and we've recorded, about six tunes with him.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know Butch. I had him on the show recently because he put out his own album not too long ago. Really talented guy who works with a really wide array of artists as a writer and a producer. Is this the first time you worked with him?
Yeah, he and I, funnily enough, someone told me, Butch used to own one of your Steve Stevens guitars back in the 80s. So I dropped him a line on Instagram and said, hey, I heard you used to play my guitar. So we started a dialogue, and I kept saying to Idol, this is the guy to work with. He's got one foot in the punk rock door, but also, as you said, he's got such a diverse catalog of things he's done, and it really worked out fantastic. I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about him.
So how far along did you get, and are you still working on the Billy Idol record with him? Did you say you had six songs done?
Yeah, I think, we're figuring out, what the best way to put this stuff out, possibly an EP or, maybe put out four songs at a time. But yeah, we're actually done with the first batch of tunes.
And, a guy like Butch has a diverse background. He originally was in like an 80s hard rock band back in the day. We've talked about all that when he was on. But he definitely has a pop sensibility to the things that he does. Material-wise, what can you tell us what it sounds like? Is there some of the pop leanings in there, or is it more a punk vibe? What's the material like?
It's hard to describe, but it's definitely, it definitely has a nod back to the classic Billy Idol stuff, the Rebel Yell era stuff. Lots of guitars. He's a guitar player as well. And so he and I kind of like, we're like kids in a candy store, let's do the, as two guitar fans, it rocks, but in a modern way. I mean, I know that's a little vague, but it, it definitely, it's definitely an aggressive sounding record. It's in your face, but it's all down to the songs, and that guy definitely knows how to help craft great songs.
Are you guys working virtually, or since you're all in LA, are you able to get into a studio together?
No, we work together. It was just the three of us. So, as I mentioned, we quarantined, and he engineers, and it was virtually just the three of us in his studio.
And how has Billy been through this whole lockdown sort of thing? How has he been holding up?
The real drag is, he's great and excited about the music, but now his mom passed away about 3 weeks ago, it's horrible because you can't travel. She's in the UK, and he actually couldn't even go to her funeral. I mean, I don't want to, dwell on that too much, but it's horrible. That aspect of this whole COVID thing is really horrible. I usually visit my mom pretty often, and she's down in Florida. I haven't been able to go see her, and so that's the reality of what we're dealing with. That's the bad stuff,
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I had an aunt that I was extremely close to pass away a few months ago, and same deal. You couldn't do the send off that you'd want. And it's so challenging. And we all have our parents and stuff, if we still are lucky enough to have them, are older and some are in nursing homes and stuff. I've talked to a lot of people. They can't get to see them. And it's very, very, very exactly. challenging. You're right. That personal side to things and the family stuff is what really has been the hardest part, I think.
That is the hardest part. You know, I mean, you know, in some respects, you know, my wife and I, you know, we travel. If I'm not doing the, you know, Billy Idol stuff, I'm doing, you know, All-Star stuff. Or, you know, there's a lot of traveling. So it's been the first opportunity for us to actually, like, have house plants and things because we're home. We can take care of them. So I've developed a, you know, slight green thumb. And my wife kicked into gear right away doing masks. And initially she did a bunch of masks for the hospital here, Cedars-Sinai. And then it turned into a little business. And so she's cranking out these masks for people. And, so, you know, we're doing what we can. And, you know, I'm doing virtual, you know, online, stuff, lots of, podcasts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely get into that, but that's pretty funny, though, that Steve Stevens gets plants for the first time in his life.
Hey, I'm not going to tell you what kind of plants, though.
Oh, yeah, well, that's all legal in California, though. You could have those plants if you're talking exactly. about weed.
You can't, exactly, and I'll tell you, man, those things grow quick.
Yeah, I'm sure that, but I my understanding is that it's, not to go down a rabbit hole here, but growing marijuana is actually really difficult, right? In terms of like having the right lighting and the right environment. I have a friend of mine who's a big legal grower. He's he grows for medicinal outlets, and there's a lot that goes on to doing that. There's a bit of an art in that, I think, too.
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe I got lucky because those things just like grew like weeds. It's like I kept calling him like Seymour after like Little Shop of Horrors. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this thing's growing.
Hey, before we move on to some of the virtual stuff you're doing, let me ask you, what is the status of Deadland Ritual, the band with Geezer and Frankie and Matt Sorum? Is that still happening?
Well, it is, but you know, we had actually finished writing. All the tunes are written, but that's one of those projects which really requires, you know, every band member to be in a room together, requires a big studio for a big sound. And, you know, original plan was at some point this year, we were going to go in and do, you know, cut the actual album. We just don't know when that'll allow it. And then, you know, the opportunity to do some Billy Idol stuff quickly came to. So Deadland is kind of on hold at the moment, but you know, the material and the stuff will definitely see the light of day.
How did you feel about the handful of live shows you did do? I know you did the one in the US and then you did a few shows in the UK or Europe somewhere, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, the festival shows were great. I mean, it's, you know, for me, man, as a guitar player, to get up and, you know, obviously I think I spoke to you about, you know, my what a thrill it is to have a rhythm section like Geezer and Matt Sorum. But the, you know, the catalog that you can draw on in the, you know, within a 45-minute set, which is, you know, on the festival shows, that's about what we played. I mean, it was just like from GNR to Guns N' Roses to, you know, to, you know, some Sabbath and, you know, Billy. I mean, the set list was incredible. And the original tunes, you know, held up well against them. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we can crank that baby up again.
Yeah, one of the things I did love about the set list, if I recall, is one or two of the Sabbath songs you did were from the Dio era. And I had Tony Iommi on here not long ago. We were talking and, you know, sadly, with Ronnie being gone, I mean, there's no other way you can hear that material live. So I thought it was cool that I think it was Heaven and Hell, the song, or a couple things you did from that period, which is, and Frankie can sing the hell out of it. I mean, it's not something you're ever really going to be able to hear with any of the Sabbath members attached to it, and with Geezer being in there playing it, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was great fun for me to, that, you know, you know, that those that era of Sabbath is just as valid as any other one. I mean, Ronnie is, you know, just incredible, and those tunes are just great to play. I mean, yeah, you know, that was my I raised my hand for that. They were did Symptom of the Universe, and that was one of the, so we got to do that, you know.
Yeah, and the last thing on that, Steve, is that, you know, it's interesting when you look at a band like that, and I see this all the time. It's very common. To an outsider, you look at the band like that, and you're like, oh, they got Steve Stevens on guitar from Billy Idol, and they got Geezer Butler from Sabbath, they got Matt Sorum from GNR, these big names. The fans assume that getting something like that off the ground is really easy because you've got all these big names attached. But in reality, and I see it constantly, it's really not. It is almost like starting from the beginning. You do really still have to build a fan base from the ground up, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, in its innocence, it's, you know, it all starts with, you know, something that might look good on paper. You know, we didn't know until we got into the rehearsal room, and you got to hear what the chemistry is like. You know, do we all have styles that are, complementary to each other? Because that, even though you have, you know, you can have the most amazing players in the world, but if they don't really gel, man, it doesn't matter. So it started with that. And then all of us, you know, being willing to, take the early slots and on the B stage, and we were just happy to play, man. You know, we're still knuckleheads like that.
<laughs> <laughs> Well, that's awesome. So let's talk about some, because we're in a virtual world. Everybody is doing some sort of streaming. Everybody is doing streaming concerts, streaming tutorials. Everything's internet virtual based now. And you got a few different things going on, one of which is the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp Masterclass, which yours is on October 11th. And I know that Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp has been doing these with a ton of artists. I actually did one a couple months ago talking to people about radio and TV, and I'm doing another one tomorrow, but yours is on October 11th. So is this your first one, or have you done them before?
This will be the second one. Yeah. And, I've done it in person, you know, and in Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, if people don't know, it's, you know, people sign up to get pointers, and you kind of coach, musicians through a live performance, and they eventually get to play and learn the tunes. But I didn't know exactly how it would work virtually. And actually, the way they've set it up is brilliant. Everyone gets to ask questions, and I prepare a litany of things that I think people might be interested in. You know, I'm not really a schooled guy. They can get all the theory and the all that other stuff from plenty of other guitar players. So I kind of, you know, honed in on what I think they'd really want to know, you know, that I've learned over the course of my career. And a lot of the questions were really smart and really intuitive. So, you know, I got as much out of it, I think, as maybe some of the online people.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I did it. And when they reached out to me about doing it, I said, well, I don't play an instrument. I mean, I'm not a musician. They said, well, no, you can. We're having producers on and record label people on. And you with my history in radio and TV, they said there's a ton of people that would like to learn about that and ask questions about it. So I really enjoyed it. I got great, like you said, I got great questions from people. Everybody's really respectful. Yep. They want to learn. They've got things they always wanted to kind of find out about. And it's really a lot of fun. So yours is October 11th, the next one. And you can go to the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp website, and you can see all of the people that are doing them. Mine, which is tomorrow, Steve's the 11th, or any of the others. And the pricing is there. And I believe there's different tiers now where, I don't know if they did that on yours, Steve, but I know on mine, where you can just watch, or you can be fully engaged, or for a little more, you can ask questions and see the person. So there's a bunch of different price points on it now, I believe.
Yeah, I think the starting price is like $25 just to log on and watch the whole thing. And that seems like a pretty, I mean, look at, man, if I could have had something like this when I was 14 years old and like interacted and asked Jimmy Page a question, I mean, that would have been incredible. So I put myself in that, you know, when I was asked to do it, I went, yeah, this is something I would have loved you know, as a, you know, budding guitar player. And so I think it's so well organized. They really have it down.
When you did the previous one, what was the thing that the most, that most people wanted to know from you? Was it like, you know, can you play the solo too? You know, Rebel Yell or whatever. I mean, what were you getting the most, or was there one consensus thing?
I think interestingly enough, it wasn't so much that, I've worked with, I'm one of those guitar players that, you know, of, you know, almost a 40 year career now, and I've worked with so many different people. Have been graced with, good sounding records and good guitar tracks. And so I think people were really interested in how to capture your guitar, for album quality and stuff, because a lot of people have home studios now, but they don't really, there's not a lot of places to get the knowledge of, you know, okay, how are you going to record an acoustic guitar or nylon guitar or, you know, rhythm guitar, what's the best way? And so hopefully I passed on a lot of that knowledge. Is, you know, I'm not the guy to tell them, you know, what scales to play in, you know, to practice. They can get that stuff online and, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking at the lineup coming up. So it's me tomorrow. It's Lou Graham on Thursday. Nugent doing his second one on Saturday. Nugent will tell you how to play guitar and hunt.
Right, I'm sure. Exactly. Yeah. And skin them.
Yeah, I'm sure Ted will give you all your rifle tips and guitar tips.
Interestingly enough, you know, one of my most biggest influences was Steve Howe from Yes, and he is not known for divulging a lot. You know, he's kind of like this quintessential English guy. I told the Rock and Roll Fantasy people, send me, I really want to see his session. And he was fantastic. How, you know, for some reason in this environment and with the questions, I think they're getting information from not just guitar players, but yourself. And, they had Shep Gordon and, you know, everybody in the industry. And, I think that people are getting something that they haven't gotten from musicians before.
Well, and that's a great point, because a guy like Steve Howe, so I've done a few of these Yes cruises called Cruise to the Edge, and I've interviewed Steve, and I know for a fact Steve is a guy that isn't so comfortable around large crowds face to face, and actually even before the pandemic had a reputation for being a bit of a germaphobe. So a platform like this, where he can still interact and teach and share information, but alleviate some of that direct contact, which some people shy away from, even unrelated to the pandemic. I mean, that would be a great platform. I could see why he would excel with it.
Yeah, I learned so much from his session that, you know, and I've been listening to him since I was 13. I learned so much of his history and the background of his stuff that, that I didn't know. So, I think they've really latched onto something with this.
So that's interesting that Steve Howe, I mean, obviously Steve's an amazing player, but that's interesting. He's one of your favorites. Were you big into progressive music growing up?
Huge. The thing was, I had started on acoustic guitar this is like the Cliff Notes version, and when I was like 7 and a half, had a flamenco teacher, a little bit of classical, a little bit of jazz, and didn't get an electric guitar until I was 13. So when I heard Steve play, he was the first guy in a rock band, whether it was progressive or whatever, that utilized all these other styles, that was tapping into a little bit of classical, you know, when I bought that Fragile record with Mood for a Day and things like that on. And he was really good at orchestrating his guitar parts, a bit like Jimmy Page, whereas somebody like a Clapton, you know, had his one blues-based thing. I love Clapton, but he doesn't really paint with the colors that these guys do. So I really gravitated towards the early prog guys, Steve Hackett, Robert Fripp, and just the way that they arrange their guitars, like a mini orchestra.
I just can't, the irony of that all does, it just, I just can't, it's just funny because you come up and you're so known for playing with this, you know, punk rock icon, and punk and Prague couldn't be two bigger different worlds. You could be blowing your punk cred, Steve.
Well, that was the thing, because when Idol and I met, you know, I wasn't aware that the punk thing was such a, in England, was such a socioeconomic thing, and they were really rebelling against a lot of these, you know, big rock stars living in their castles and all of this. And so by then, certainly, and I was feeling it too, you know, I'm talking about Prague in the early, you know, obviously the first King Crimson record is, yeah, it's Prague, but it's, there's something else about it. But, you know, by 74, Prague had kind of crawled up its own butt anyway. So, but I loved, you know, growing up in New York, I didn't kind of like segment, I didn't put my music taste in boxes, because I love the Ramones and bands like Tough Darts and Heartbreakers, and obviously, you know, the Dolls out of New York and Kiss. You know, I didn't kind of, you know, as I said, put it into categories. So when I met Billy, we had to find common ground, and, you know, fortunately we did. But, you know, it's, you know, I always felt that it was, if he had had another, you know, punk guitar player, well, he already did, you know, Generation X. And I felt he really didn't need that. He needed somebody who would bring in some other elements.
Oh, well, I couldn't agree more with that, because that, you know, it was the perfect match, and it still is, because you bring that element that would attract me to somebody like Billy Idol, and then you get into it and you realize how great it is across the board. So I think it was, you know, those two different worlds coming together. It was a big, big plus. Let me ask you, along the lines of social media and everything that's going on, and you doing this, everybody doing streaming and virtual stuff and connecting over the internet. So you're also doing Cameo now, and did I read right that you are also now on Twitter? You've dived full in, haven't you, man?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, my wife's really active on social media,
right?
And I always felt that anything that I was doing, she was going to talk about and get that information out there. But then I realized that a lot of my friends and I saw people that I wanted to connect with that I hadn't spoken to in many years. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just, you know, I'm not super active on it. I check in on it. And, I'm more of, you know, Instagram is like the one that I kind of, when I have my morning coffee, I'll check. But, it's just another tool. It's another way to get people, you know, aware of what you're doing, because there's a lot of information out there now.
Yeah, I've always, it's funny with social media, my order has always been Twitter first. I find it the most useful. I get the most immediate information out there. And I like the fact that you don't need to put a picture up in order to post something. So
true.
I do all of them, but I'll look at Instagram here and there, and I have one, but I've always liked the interactivity of Twitter and the immediacy of it. And just the fact that, you know, I always looked at it as like, you know, I'm lucky I've got a ton of followers there. I always looked at it as like, okay, it's like basically texting for me 300,000 right. people and telling them that Steve Stevens is on my show today. So that's kind of how I've looked at it. If you get too deep into it, I mean, it could mess you up, because obviously, just like anything, there's people with bad intent and trolls and what have you. But as long as you use it to make it work for you, I've always found it to be actually my favorite one of them. But it's all comes down to preference.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've got a website too. You redid your website. We should tell everybody about that as we fill out the online stuff. SteveStevensGuitar.com is the website. And tell me about a song that your manager told me you put a new unreleased song up there.
Yeah, I did. You know, we decide that, you know, we'll do a proper website. I never really had time to dedicate to it. And, you know, also I felt that, you know, so much of my world was available on the Billy Idol website, because there's a Steve Stevens page on there, and Billy and his people are kind enough to post anything that I'm doing, whether it's, you know, Kings of Chaos or even, Dead Man Ritual. They were all supportive of it. But then I thought, you know, I should have my proper website. And then I wrote an instrumental piece as a kind of opening for the for the website as a little teaser for fans. And so I hope to, update it with, factual stuff and going through, I'm posting old photos that I come across and interesting little tidbits and things. So, so it's, as you said, it's just another way to communicate to people.
Yeah, well, look, if we've learned anything here, I mean, as a byproduct of this pandemic, everybody is trying to figure out the best way to keep in touch with their fans and stay connected. And you've in the time that you've been home, which is probably, this has probably been a longer run than you've had maybe in decades. It's given you an opportunity to connect in some other ways and explore some other stuff. So that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we'll remind everybody again, the masterclass with Steve for Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp is October 11th. You can get tickets for that right now. The website you want to visit is rockcamp.com/masterclass. And when you go there, you'll see all of them, myself included for tomorrow, Steve on the 11th, and all the other artists that are doing them. And just check the various pricing and all that, because everyone is different. Some, they've got tickets starting at $25, some they don't. Some are, different price points, but see what you're interested in. And again, you can follow Steve now on Twitter at Steve Stevens. And anything else I missed that's coming down the pike that I don't know about?
No, I think that's about it for now. I think that the my masterclass is 8 o'clock Eastern time, so that's 5 o'clock Pacific. I think that's a time slot that was.
Yeah, it is. I just looked at it.
Sunday,
yep.
The 11th. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Rockcamp.com is again where you want to go, or just, go /masterclass on that. And Steve, one thing I just wanted to ask you. So of all the things you've done, and there's things you've done that people know very well and some maybe not so much. Is there, for you as a guitar player, is there a record that, say there's a kid listening to this, he's never heard of Steve Stevens before. He doesn't know, what he's done. He doesn't know the history. Is there a record you direct them at? Is there, what's that?
I said, how dare he?
But, I meet young people all the time that are just getting into rock music they're just discovering people. Is there a record that you feel is like your most defining in your career that you would tell somebody, if you want to hear what I'm about, this is where you would start?
That's a tough one. I would say, Rebel Yell Up, obviously. Still, I never tire of playing those songs with Billy, so that must mean something. But also, my Flamenco A Go-Go record is a really important other. It's the other side of me. It's the Jekyll and the Hyde thing. So I would say if they're gonna if they're gonna listen to the craftsmanship and the songwriting and the arranging side of me and the mixture of every style, then yeah, I would say Rebel Yell, but also my acoustic side on Flamenco A Go-Go is something that I think is pretty unique to me as a guitar player.
And how about in your catalog, what you feel would be like maybe one of the most overlooked records, a record that you feel strongly about that maybe didn't get the attention it deserved?
I still think that the Vince Neil record is pretty good.
I was going to ask you, that's where I was going. Yeah.
I get a lot of comments from young guitar players who, during the 90s, it was not cool to be that technically proficient. Shred was not, it's kind of like everybody went underground with the shred. And, it's kind of okay to be technically proficient now. And I get a lot of messages from young guitar players who have discovered that record, and they're really into it on a guitar level. And that's one of those records where I was really allowed to play as heavy and as lots of extended solos, and it was damn fun to do.
Are you in touch with Vince still at all?
I'm not. I saw him in Vegas, and it was it was all love and it was all loved up, and but I haven't been in touch with him. This is probably about 2 years now.
Right. Well, listen, man, it's always great to catch up with you. Send my best to your wife as well, Josie. Wish her all the best. And good luck with the master class on the 11th for Steve Stevens. And again, there's a ton of other ones, but you can check them all out online, as I mentioned. And we just covered all the other things that Steve's got going, and hoping for hearing some of that new music soon. You think you guys might release a single or something in the near future?
I think there'll be something out this year. I don't know in what form yet, but I think there'll definitely be some Billy Idol music out this year.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. All right, man. Well, hopefully things get back to normal soon. And once we can all start traveling, I'll get a chance to see you, and stay well. Okay.
Great. Yeah. It's great to hear from you, Eddie.
All right, Steve, take care. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks to Steve Stevens. Another interview for you this week on the Eddie Trunk podcast. It's coming right up with guitarist, vocalist Orianti.
This was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Welcome back, everybody. Eddie Trunk here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. And next up, a conversation with guitarist, vocalist Orianti. She is a great talent from Australia. She also has a solo career, which she has reactivated with a brand new record that has just come out. We talked to her about all of it right now. Ori, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. And congratulations on this new record, which is coming out on November 6th. I've had a chance to get a little advanced listen to it, and it sounds great. Tell me about putting this one together.
Hey, thank you so much. I did this whole record with Marty Fredrickson in Nashville in like 28 days, and I wanted to keep it sort of raw, rock, and real, and not sort of overthought. And we had a blast making it. And it just put out Sinner's Hymn, the first single, and just shot the music video for Impulsor, the second single, yesterday. So, and doing a live whiskey show with my band on this Saturday at the 19th here in LA. So it's been a blast. I'm so excited to get new music out there. And it's been a lot of fun creating it.
Well, I want to talk to you about that whiskey show, because that is going to be an interesting thing where it's a streaming thing. So we'll be sure to get the word out about that. Tell me about connecting with Marty Fredrickson, because he is a tremendously talented writer and producer. I know he's worked with a lot of different artists. How did you end up deciding to work with and connect with him?
I've actually known Marty since I was about 20 years old. So when I first came over to the U.S., we started working together, writing together, and we wrote actually a song on my last record that was produced by Dave Stewart, on there with, and it was a duet with Steven Tyler. So I actually wrote the song with Marty, and Steven came in and worked on it with us too, and he sang on it. And that was on Heaven and His Hell. And then I went to Nashville and reconnected with Marty after quite some time, about, you know, like 7 years. And after we wrote the first track, Rescue Me, that was the first track we wrote for the album. It was acoustic. And then I came back home to LA and I listened to the demos from my Nashville writing trip. And I'm like, that just feels the way I want to go, you know? And so I text Marty. I'm like, hey, will you produce my album? You know? And he's like, yeah. And so that's kind of how it started. And I just went over to Nashville and we just did the whole record together. And he's so awesome. He's so talented. He's a good friend. He's a great producer, but he's a great writer too. So sometimes, you know, you have great producers, but they're not writers, you know? So with him, and it was just basically myself, Marty, and his son. And that was it for the whole record, you know, with all the parts, the drums, bass, guitars, everything. So it was a real blast to do. And actually, Nikki Sixx helped. He sent some lyrics through for Streams of Consciousness. And, that was awesome, too, to work with him and have his input. And I can't wait for people to hear that track, too. So.
So Nikki's involved as well, at least as a co-writer on something. So when I listen to the record and really listen to a lot of your stuff, to me, there's great guitar playing and there's certainly a rock edge, obviously, to everything you're doing. But to me, you also and there's certainly nothing wrong with this, there's also a pop sensibility in some of the things that comes into your writing and your playing. And that really goes back to even your first hit, that huge song, According to You. Is that a line you always try to walk, where you know, you want to showcase your playing, your singing, your guitar playing and rock, but at the same time, you've got that, I think, that influence in you too, where there's a bit of a pop element. Would that be safe to say?
I love a good pop song. Okay, I definitely do, you know, and I grew up listening to a lot of, you know, pop music too. Like, my dad is a guitar collector. He's a record collector. He listened to Jimi Hendrix, Cream, you know, all that kind of stuff, and B.B. King and Stevie Ray, Santana. So I grew up listening to all of that, and predominantly the blues and rock and all, you know, I'm, that's where I, you know, kind of, that was all my influences were in that realm. But, you know, being a teenager and playing in cover bands, I listened to a lot of pop music, and then, you know, getting to be with Michael Jackson and doing all that. And just, you know, I'm a fan of a good pop song and all that, and just a good song. And definitely, you know, for sure, I definitely do have, there's definitely pop elements in this record too. Like, it's not all like rock and blues. It's definitely got different layers to it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I picked up on about it, and that I really liked, is that there's, you know, there's some great showcases for your guitar playing, and there's certainly a rock edge to it. But yes, there's blues elements, there's pop elements. It's really a really cool mix of a lot of different things, and it all, you know, really does sound great. I want to ask you, Orianti, because the last time you and I saw each other and had a chance to do something together, it was a few years ago, and it was at the NAMM show. I'm sure you remember. And of course, at that point, you were working with Richie and doing the RSO thing, and you guys had both come and done my radio show. You know, I'm curious with that, you know, and I know that the relationship ended, and I don't want to get into that, but from a musical situation, looking back on that, was that something that you look back on fondly musically? Is that something that you enjoy doing, working with Richie Sambora and making that music together?
I got to tell you, we're great. Like, you know, we've been talking now, but we've been, you know, as I said, we're in a good place. Richie and I, like, we're great friends. We work together. We, you know, collaborate on stuff still and support each other with, he's got a record coming out and he's heard mine and loves it, and we've been writing together too, you know. And I guess, you know, when back then with the whole RSO thing, we were really proud of that record, you know, and leaving the door open. We're just talking about this the other night, actually, you know, leaving the door open for future collabs and everything. Absolutely, you know. And I do look back on that experience as, like, you know, working with Bob Rock and Richie on that record, we spent a long time on it, you know. We were really, really proud of it and everything. And yeah, it was just, you know, it got to a point where we were just like, okay, he wanted to make a solo record, I want to make a solo record, and it just got there, and now we, you know, we support each other, and everything's really cool. So everything's great, to be honest.
Well, that's great to hear that you're you know, musically together again. Safe to say that it's a difficult thing to have a public relationship and also work professionally with somebody as you did at that time.
I mean, everyone has a, you know, has something to say about, you know, everything. And when you read, like, comments on YouTube, whatever the hell it is, or Instagram, and, you know, some people loved it, some people hated it. Like, it was all this mixed thing. You can get caught up in that. But honestly, at the end of the day, we're really proud of it. And, at the end, you know, it's like, we love each other, and we still do, you know, everything's cool. And support each other. So, but it is, I mean, it's a difficult thing, you know, when you work together and you live together and you're in the public eye and everyone's got, you know what I mean, all that stuff going on. It was some craziness, can say it wasn't, for sure. But yeah, you know, it's all cool now though, you know.
And the last thing on that, you know, when you guys worked, came and did my show together at NAMM, we were at that convention center. It was a couple of years ago. If you recall, afterwards, Richie said, get in the car. And I sat in the car with you and Richie, and he cranked a bunch of music that at that time, what you guys were working on to come out. And if my recollection serves me right, and you can correct me on this because I don't remember exactly, but what you guys played me and what he was cranking for me in that SUV that day in that parking lot to me, it was not what ended up coming out, or at least not the same. Did something change gears? Is there material that never came out that was supposed to? What I remember hearing in the car was not ended up what ended up being on the record.
Yeah, I think you heard the demos. I think you heard I think you heard the mixes before they were like, if it was done, you know what I mean? And we wrote so many songs for that record, right? So I think you heard the stuff that Bob Rock just literally just did, you know, and we just cranked it. Because I really cannot recall the songs that we pushed to you. But I do remember sitting in the car and cranking up some heavy stuff, right? And you heard, yeah.
The car was rocking. So I mean, I remember it. And I remember him saying, this is just the start of it, and these are the demos or whatever. Well, I remember because you guys had to go and do some appearance somewhere at NAMM, and he's like, no, Ori, dial up one more. You got to play. I remember it so fondly, and it was great. The windows were shaking, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. But I think it was slightly different than what ended up coming out.
And the windows were slightly breaking, our ears were bleeding, and we just cranked it up for it. And I do remember that moment, but I do think that we wrote so many songs that not all of them did make the record, you know what I mean? Because there was just a lot that we wrote, like over like, I guess, like 30 or 40 tracks, you know, and we recorded so many as well. I can't remember how many actually ended up on the record, but yeah, you're probably right. We probably played you a song that didn't end up on the record.
Yeah. Totally right. Well, hey, it sounds like what you're saying is it's not entirely impossible now that at some point, maybe that's some things that didn't make it are revisited, because you were saying earlier that you're not ruling out, you know, potentially making music again together.
No, as we were talking about the other day, we leave the door open to that, you know, of course. And as I said, like Richie's got his album, his solo record coming out. I've got mine coming out in November, and we support each other in our solo endeavors and all that. And you know, it's all cool now, you know, and things, you know, happen and whatever publicly, and it's all this big thing. And then, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
That's good. Well, the new album is coming out on November 6th. It's called O. We just touched on it with Marty Fredrickson. And I've had a chance to hear it. It sounds absolutely great. In addition to the album, Orianti, you also have a signature guitar coming out with Gibson. Is that correct?
I do. I'm so thrilled about this guitar. It's a J200, and it's the first hybrid. They actually followed me down the rabbit hole on this. A crazy Australian. I go to Montana, and they say, what guitar would you like to make a signature? And I'm like, the J200. And they say, isn't that a little big? And I'm like, yeah, but it sounds amazing. I said, but the only thing is the neck is a little bit, you know, kind of fat to, like, play, like, leads on. It's a little bit like a boat neck, especially because I have, you know, girl hands as well. So if we put a 345 neck on the J200, then it would be the best of both worlds, right? So it's like a lead guitar player is, like, you know, glorified, you know, and you can just, and then the pickup needs to be modified as well. So went in with LR Bags, who does the pickups, we modified the pickup, we changed everything, we put the 345 neck on the J200, and it sounds incredible. I got the prototype, and I'm in love with this guitar. It's amazing. It's going to be available, I think, in January, February next year, so just blown away. Gibson did an incredible job with it. So it's the first electric, I think it's the first acoustic electric hybrid that Gibson has done in history, so I'm very honored that they followed my crazy ass down that rabbit hole to do something like this. So I can't wait for people to check this thing out, because it's so cool. It's so rad.
Well, I'm glad that they're still, I mean, I've gotten to know the folks running that company now, and they're real nice people, and they've really made a hell of a comeback with that company in the last couple of years, and it's obviously a legendary brand, so it's great to see that happening.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just blown away. I'm so grateful that they called me up and wanted me to do something with them, so can't wait for people to check this guitar out. Insane. It's really insane.
So tell me about the Whiskey performance, which is, you said it's this Saturday?
Yeah, this Saturday with my band, I threw my band in. We just had rehearsals, and I can't wait. You know, we're playing. I mean, I haven't played a show this whole year. I mean, it's crazy. Feels like 10 years ago I played a show. So we're just so excited to play, even though it's to like five cameramen. You know, it's going to be live stream worldwide from the Whiskey this Saturday. You can get your tickets through Veeps and also the Whiskey, and we're playing like three or four new songs off the new album O, and other songs as well, and like an hour show for like $10. And there's also different merch packages. You can get like downloads for the album, the single, Sinners, him as well. And yeah, everything's up on my Instagram and also at the Whiskey website too. So yeah, it's gonna be a blast.
So it sounds like you're living in LA. Is that where you've been based during this whole lockdown?
Yeah. I've been living in LA now for like 16 years or something like that. So
Okay.
Yeah.
So the performance, just for clarity, it's not open to fans. There's no audience there whatsoever. It's going to be, the door's locked, but you guys will perform and it'll be a live as it happens ticketed stream, right?
That's great. It's on demand as well. So you can actually, I think it's 48 hours later or a week later, I think you can actually get tickets as well. But I think it's pretty much, or 48 hours after the show. I've got to get clarity on that. But yeah, it's live worldwide on Saturday. But there's going to be no audience, no, due to what's going on right now.
And what do you make of all that? I imagine you still have family in Australia and everything. I mean, I don't know how the conditions are there, but as a touring musician who's played with so many people, what do you make of where things are at right now? And what would it take and what would you need to see for you to go back out on the road and play regular gigs in front of people again? Because there are some artists that are doing it now in certain cities.
Yeah, I've heard about the drive-in shows, which seem to be, you know, going pretty good. I think, you know, safety first, because we don't know too much about this whole thing. And to be honest, it's pretty, you know, when you turn on the news, it's pretty daunting. It's scary. It's like, oh, my God. And I've been talking to a lot of different people, my agent and manager and everyone else, and different artists too. And they're going, oh, hopefully next year everything will be fine when the vaccine's out and everything. But for me, I think that it's really important that, you know, maybe like the outdoor gigs start up first, and then you have a bit of social distancing, you wear a mask, people are checked maybe, you got to get a COVID test before you go in or something. I don't know, something's going to happen, or it's going to, I don't really know what the solution, the answer is, but I mean, being a musician and just playing live shows, I mean, that's what we work towards. That's what you're, you know, in your room practicing. I mean, when you have nothing to sort of like, that's really like a lot of the reason why, you know, I play music is to play shows, you know, and to go out there and my band, and that's, it's so fun, you know, not having, and also it's how we make our living too, and getting out on the road. So it's been pretty difficult for a lot of people, not only, you know, like financially, but also mentally too, to overcome this, and just singing to your cameras in your bedroom, right? So, or your living room. So it's very weird. I'm just praying that something does change drastically, and that the vaccine is available, and that, you know, I don't know, something's worked out that shows can go ahead, and whether, as I said, it's an outdoor thing where people have to wear masks and social distance somewhat on big fields or whatever, and the drive-in thing. At this point, you know, that's all I can kind of think about, really. I mean, I just can't wait to start playing when it's safe. But safety first, you know, obviously for the fans attending, the people attending, and then, you know, the band and everybody around. You don't want to put anyone in a situation, so...
And I'm curious, with you being Australian and growing up in Australia, and it sounds like your parents were supportive of your musical ambitions, and some stuff was brought on you in terms of influence, maybe through them. What was the stuff, at least in the rock world, that you first saw as a kid in Australia, that or first heard, that made you want to be a guitar player and a singer and a songwriter? What were the big early influences for you growing up?
My dad is a guitar player, so he had like Jimi Hendrix records, vinyl, you know, Santana, Cream, Albert King, B.B. King, Elvis, everything, you know, Roy Orbison, the Beatles, Stones. I mean, I listened to all of that when I was like 6 years old. So I grew up in a time warp because I went to school and everyone was listening to, you know, New Kids on the Block or different things, right? Whatever, those in the 80s, early 90s. And then I was like wanting to form bands that I listened to, like B.B. King and Stevie Ray. So I put flyers up and I dressed like a hippie. And so I honestly grew up in a time warp and people thought I was a freak at school. It was great. And I left when I was 15 and joined cover bands and just play, you know, three nights a week until like 20 years old, until I got a record deal and moved over to L.A. But, you know, it was really my dad just putting on those records. And then when I was younger, about, you know, when I was like 15 years old, I got signed my first management deal, and then I started opening for like Steve Vai, ZZ Top around Australia. And then I went and saw, actually going back, saw it all over the place. When I was about 11 years old, I saw Santana play, and he's the reason why I wanted to really play electric guitar, because he just blew me away with the way that he, you know, played Europa. Like, that's just the most beautiful instrumental ever to me. And the guitar tone, the phrasing, everything about that. And it just really hit me. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So it was between like Carlos, Jimi Hendrix, and Stevie Ray, you know, because the freedom in Jimmy's playing too. It's very inspiring. He's constantly searching, you know, when he's playing his solos, and he takes you on a journey, and it's just amazing. And he just changed the way that people heard the guitar. And that to me is like insane.
And did you not end up, and correct me if I'm wrong here, did you not end up working with Santana in some capacity?
Yeah, well, Carlos Santana, I've known him since I was like 18 years old when I first met him in Adelaide, Australia. He got me up on stage and we played, he got me on stage and we played like 15,000 people, and he kept me on stage for like 45 minutes because I knew every one of his songs, right? Because I bought all of his albums, studied all of his solos, worn out, you know, VHS, you know, I just paused it and kind of tried to learn every solo. And so he took that video of that performance and sent it to Corey Smith Guitars and a bunch of other people too. And that's how I got invited over to the NAMM show. And that's how I got my record deal. So Carlos really helped me a lot. Was a big supporter and still is a great friend and very grateful for support.
That's amazing. At 18 years old on stage and playing with Carlos Santana, that's simply remarkable. And the other thing, and I've mentioned this to you in the past, but I think it's interesting. Most people know you also played in Michael Jackson's band. And when Michael Jackson passed away, the video clip that was serviced to every news organization that played on a loop for weeks was of a clip of Michael Jackson coming over to you during those tour rehearsals. And, you know, you playing to him, and for whatever reason, that was the isolated clip they showed all over the world. That's what they decided to pull. Did you have any, did that, I mean, obviously the shock of Michael dying, but then the fact that in every single video, everywhere, it was 24/7, there was you with Michael, that had to just seem surreal.
It was, honestly, that was probably one of the most insane moments in my life, because it was just a mixture of emotions. Like, it was just in shock. Everyone was in shock because we, you know, rehearsed with Michael the night before he passed until like 12 a.m. And he was so happy and everything was great. We got news the next morning he had passed, right, when we were heading to rehearsals. And then we all got there and we were all just like, is this real? Is it really? Are you like serious? Like, you know, it didn't hit us until... And then everyone was bombarding TMZ, everything. And then the news clips came up and everything was just like, honestly, it was overload of just like, what's going on? And then the emotion, because he became a friend to everybody too. You know, not only was he like, you know, I mean, he's the greatest entertainer ever. And, well, one of the greatest entertainers ever to work with. And he was so personable to everybody, you know, and so sweet. And, we were working together really hard as a group, you know, on this tour and everything. And we just felt that family vibe, you know, after 4 months, something like that. And it was just, we felt the loss, and then we were just like going through all these different emotions. And then we turned the TV, I had that clip running, and then constantly people were messaging me. And then my album came out too at the same time through Interscope. So there was all this stuff going on. And then honestly, that whole thing was kind of a blur. It was a bit crazy. Cause I was just trying to figure out, I was really upset at the whole situation, and then you throw it into this sort of media thing, and then every time you turn on the TV, you can't escape it. And it was a crazy time for sure.
How did you end up getting the gig with Michael Jackson? Did you go through an audition process? Had he seen you playing with somebody? How did you end up getting in the band?
Well, he'd asked around, and apparently he asked Carlos Santana, and Santana said me, and then a few other people he'd asked around, and they threw my name back, and then he turned on the Grammy Awards, and I was playing with Carrie Underwood at the Grammys, last name with her, and then I got a message through MySpace. I was working with Diane Warren, I was in doing a vocal take, and I got a MySpace message that said, "Hi, I'm Michael Jackson's musical director, Michael Bearden, and you're exactly what Michael wants in his band." And I'm like, is this for real? Like, I thought it was a joke, actually. So I forwarded it to my manager at the time. I'm going, is this real? He's like, yeah, it is. Michael's calling you tonight with Michael Bearden. I'm like, okay. And I get a call. Hey, you know, this is Michael Bearden. And hey, this is Michael Jackson. Like, would you learn Dirty Diana and Beat It and want to be starting something for tomorrow, like early afternoon, and come in and play it at rehearsal center staging? And I'm like, sure. It was just like crazy.
So it was actually him that called that. You, or he actually called you personally at that point?
It was Michael Bearden, and yeah, I believe it was Michael Jackson. Both of them were on the phone. It was crazy. I was like, oh my God, like I've got to learn, like, what is going on? Is this for real? This is crazy. So I ran home, learnt the songs, and then ran to center staging the next like morning and just plugged in, and Michael Jackson walked in. They dimmed the lights. He sat down on the couch in front of me. And they cranked, he said, I want to hear it really loud. And I was just like, how do I play guitar again? Like, legit. Like, I was going, oh my God. I don't think I've ever been that nervous, actually, ever in my life, to be honest. Because it was like literally Michael Jackson on a couch, me in front of him, standing there alone, playing the Beat It solo. I'm like, shit, this is crazy. I do remember that very vividly, that moment. I was like, oh my God. So, yeah, crazy times. But I'm very, very grateful that I got to work with him for the time I did. Truly.
When did he tell you had the gig? Right after you got done playing those three songs, or did you wait it out a little bit?
Yeah, right when I was done. Like, I literally, we finished and he turned around and he said, you're all hired. And I'm like, wow, okay, oh my God. And everyone was like really emotional. We just it was crazy. And then we all signed these forms and then started rehearsals. That was kind of what happened. You know, it was really wild, really wild times, for sure.
And it's amazing. And, of course, you also played with Alice Cooper, who we all love. It's just one of the greats and great gentlemen and great people. And I'm sure that was an amazing experience for you as well. And you get up every once in a while and still jam with him, with Nita and the rest of the crew, right?
Oh, yeah. Alice will forever be family. You know, I loved being part of that whole, the whole situation. I mean, celebrating Halloween every night with Alice was awesome and the band. And, you know, they're my brothers for life, and his whole family, and the Cheryl and Calico, everybody, and love Nita, and happy that he found Nita when I decided to leave and join the RSO thing. And they're just amazing, amazing people and players and everything. And I also played on the Hollywood Vampires first record. So I filled in a couple of times with the Vampires and that as well. So it's always an honor getting to, I just jammed with Alice at the Pudding end of last year too. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's just, you know, he's such a blast. He's one of the greatest entertainers too. I mean, getting to work with, let's say, like Michael Jackson and then Alice Cooper, who's like, they're just both so out there and so great, and they have different worlds, but they're just all about entertainment value of the show too, apart from performance and being great, you know, singers and everything. So definitely learn a lot from both of them.
As a musician, Ori, do you like the idea? Like, would you entertain the idea again at some point of being plugged into a huge existing band like Alice Cooper, or in the pop world, Michael Jackson or whatever, and coming into a band like you did in those situations versus being your own artist, writing your own songs? And obviously there's a lot of people that do both, but do you have a preference? Do you rule out ever going back and joining an established artist again?
No, I would never rule that out. I think that I have a blast doing that too. That's the thing. I love doing my own thing. You know, there's a lot of pressure when you're doing your own thing too, because, you know, you're doing everything, like, you know, writing, recording everything, and then, you know, running the whole ship. But when you're a part of something else, I really enjoy it. As long as, if it feels right, if it's the right kind of fit and everything's cool and the energy's right too, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd never rule that out.
And last thing, I've been friends with Sebastian Bach over 30 years. I've known him forever. I'm friends with the guys in his band. We're always in touch. And I heard you were writing some songs with him, right? You guys were working on some stuff for a record for him?
We wrote some really cool stuff. Yeah, I love Sebastian and his wife, and they've just been, you know, Suzanne, they're just great people. And Sebastian called me up. He's like, hey, do you have some riffs? And I'm like, I do. And so I sent him to this demo idea on like GarageBand, Logic, whatever. And then I love it. They come around. And so we actually cut the demos in his garage, like 15-year-olds, you know, like around with like Jeremy Colson on drums, he plays with Steve Vai. And it was so fun. And then we went back into the studio and just cut the demos. And he put his vocals down not too long ago on the song that we did. And it was so great. So heavy. It's awesome. I can't wait for, I mean, I don't know. I think he's putting on his record. That's what I heard last. So, but I just had the demo of it and it was awesome.
Well, good. It's been a little while since he's had some new music. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys whipped up and everything else he has, you know, that he has coming down the pike as well. All right. So we'll remind everybody once again, your new album, O, is out everywhere November 6th. I'm sure right now, if you want, you can do the pre-order bit and all that sort of thing. And we want to remind everybody to check out Orianthe this coming Saturday, live from the Whiskey. This isn't one of those pre-taped things where they're just going to show it. It's actually going to be, people can actually watch it live as it happens, right?
We're doing everything live. Live to tape. And basically, it's just a full hour show. Three or four brand new songs off the record, and yeah, it's live worldwide. So the different times and different zones, of course. So I'll put them up on my socials, but you can buy your tickets now through Veep and at the Whiskey on the website too.
For people that actually want to watch it live as you do it, so what time are you starting LA time?
I believe it's 7 p.m.
Okay, so 10 Eastern, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, if you want to log in and actually watch it live. And then, as you said, it'll be archived and people can buy into it and watch it if they're not able to tune in at that time.
Absolutely. I think it's a few days later, too, you can watch it. So, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the world we're in now. It's streaming or nothing for the most part, and everybody is doing it in every possible configuration, and it's almost so hard to keep up with all of the different ways people are doing it, because some of it is like, we shot something but we're going to debut it at that time, and others it's like, no, it's an actual live concert. And so it's a lot for people to navigate, so that's why it's important to get the proper info out there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's crazy. Even when I went to rehearsals the other day, it's like, oh my god, this is rehearsals. Like, everyone's like, it's such a weird, like normal things, you know, and then wearing the mask and just, do we hug each other? Hi. Like, it's like, you just flew in. Oh my God. Like, you know, should I stay away? And then, you know, getting tests, like COVID tests, and getting, you know, we're playing to five cameramen, like, that are shooting this in HD at the Whiskey. And that's kind of right. That's all that's allowed in the place too. You know, like, I think just my assistant's going to be there and the band and just the five cameramen and maybe two other people. That's it. And everyone has tests, and it's just very much, you know, they're being really careful, super careful, as we have to be these days. So it's crazy. I'm excited to play. I'm really happy that we're doing this for sure. So I hope people enjoy it. And it's only $10 for a ticket. You can get it on this Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, listen, best of luck with that and best of luck with the album. Again, the album is just called O, and it's out on November 6th. It's great catching up with you. It's been a little bit, and I wish you all the success and hopefully get to see you somewhere soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You take care, and thank you for having me on this show and all your support too.
You got it. Take care. Okay. We'll see you soon. Thanks to Orianthe. Much appreciated. Always great to visit with her. And thanks earlier to Steve Stevens for joining us on this week's podcast. Remember to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter and Instagram, where I am most active in that order. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. Become an all-access member of my site, and you can get yourself some radio on demand whenever you want, and a lot of other cool stuff as well. And remember, the interviews you heard come from my daily radio show, Trunk Nation, heard on Sirius XM 106 Volume. Listen every day live, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on 106. Nightly replays, 10 to midnight Eastern. And full shows and more on demand on the SiriusXM app. Also, heads up, if you happen to be in the area of Middletown, Ohio, which is outside of Cincinnati, because I am going to be there this weekend at a place called Land of Illusion in Middletown, Ohio. It's a really cool show happening there under the name of Bald Man. A great band with an actor and a musician, lead singer, goes by the name of Bald Man. And he also did a horror movie. And at Land of Illusion, inside the theme attraction, they are going to be showing the movie, and this band will perform, and I will host the evening on Friday and Halloween Saturday. So the 30th and 31st, I will be in Middletown, Ohio with the Bald Man Tour at Land of Illusion. If you're in that area, come by and say hello. And again, we thank Goodies Hangover, powerful pain reliever, boosting ingredient, fast pain relief, and a boost of alertness to help you battle the groggy, tired feeling. It comes with a hangover. It is hangover relief at the speed of powder, and it's available at Walmart, Dollar General, Amazon, and other fine retailers. More info, go to goodiespowder.com. Thanks to Katie Irizarry, the producer of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I will see you guys next week, next Thursday, for another all-new episode. Have a good week.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.